നമസ്കാരം. ന്യൂസിലൻഡിലെ നമ്മുടെ മലയാളം എഫ് എം പ്രോഗ്രാം എഫ് എം ഫ്രീക്വൻസി 104.6 ഇന്നത്തെ പരിപാടികൾ ആരംഭിക്കുന്നു. ഇന്നാദ്യം അറിഞ്ഞതും അറിയാത്തതും. ഇതിൽ ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പി ന്യൂസിലൻഡിന്റെ സിഇഒയായ നമ്മുടെ കമ്മ്യൂണിറ്റി മെമ്പർ രാഹുൽ വാട്സൺ ഗോവിന്ദനെ പരിചയപ്പെടാം. തുടർന്ന് നോ ഇംഗ്ലീഷ് നോ ഇംഗ്ലീഷ് വിത്ത് ഹോസ്റ്റ് റോജി വർഗീസ്. ഈ പരിപാടി നിങ്ങൾക്കായി അവതരിപ്പിക്കുന്നത് കൃപ ഫൈനാൻഷ്യൽ സൊല്യൂഷൻസ്, മൈൻഡ് ട്രീ നഴ്സിംഗ് സൊല്യൂഷൻസ്, സെഹിയോൺ ടൂർസ് ആൻഡ് ട്രാവൽസ്, ക്ലസ്റ്റർ ഔട്ട്ഫിറ്റ്സ്, ബ്ലോക്ക് ഹൌസ് ബേ.
നിങ്ങൾക്ക് അനുയോജ്യമായ ഹോം ലോൺ, ഫസ്റ്റ് ഹോം, ഇൻവെസ്റ്റ്മെന്റ്, റീഫിനാൻസ്, റീഫിക്സ്, കൺസ്ട്രക്ഷൻ ലോൺ, കൊമേഴ്ഷ്യൽ ലോൺ, കാർ ലോൺ എന്നിവയ്ക്ക് നിങ്ങളുടെ വിശ്വസ്ത സാമ്പത്തിക ഉപദേഷ്ടാക്കൾ കൃപ ഫൈനാൻഷ്യൽ സൊല്യൂഷൻസ്. 0800-5747-22. വിശ്വസിക്കാം, വിദഗ്ധരെ.
നിങ്ങളുടെ എല്ലാ യാത്രാ ആവശ്യങ്ങൾക്കും ഹോളിഡേ ബുക്കിംഗ്സിനും വ്യക്തിഗത സഹായം ആസ്വദിക്കൂ. കോൺടാക്ട് സെഹിയോൺ ടൂർസ് ആൻഡ് ട്രാവൽസ്, ഫോൺ നമ്പർ 0921-84000. ഓരോ യാത്രയും ഒരു അനുഗ്രഹമാണ്. സെഹിയോൺ ടൂർസ് ആൻഡ് ട്രാവൽസ്.
ന്യൂസിലൻഡിലോ ഓസ്ട്രേലിയയിലോ നേസ്യൂലി എന്ന സ്വപ്നം യാഥാർത്ഥ്യമാക്കാൻ മൈൻഡ് ട്രീ നഴ്സിംഗ് സൊല്യൂഷൻസ് ഐക്യുഎൻ ഓസ്കെ പരീക്ഷകൾക്ക് ഫേസ് ടു ഫേസ് ട്രെയിനിങ്ങും വിദഗ്ധ മാർഗനിർദ്ദേശവും നൽകി നിങ്ങളുടെ സ്വപ്നം ഞങ്ങൾ നിറവേറ്റുന്നു. മൈൻഡ് ട്രീ നഴ്സിംഗ് സൊല്യൂഷൻസ്, ഇന്ത്യ, ന്യൂസിലൻഡ് ആൻഡ് ഓസ്ട്രേലിയ.
ഇന്ത്യൻ വസ്ത്രങ്ങളും സമ്പന്നമായ കേരള പാരമ്പര്യത്തിന്റെ കുത്തുമ്പുള്ളി വസ്ത്രങ്ങളും നേരിട്ട് തിരഞ്ഞെടുക്കാം. താങ്ങാനാവുന്ന വിലകളിൽ സമാനതമില്ലാത്ത ഗുണനിലവാരത്തോടെ ഉയരട്ടെ നിങ്ങളുടെ സ്റ്റൈൽ ക്ലസ്റ്റർ ഔട്ട്ഫിറ്റ്സിനൊപ്പം.
നമസ്കാരം, ഞാൻ സിന്ധു പുന്നൂസ്. നമ്മുടെ മലയാളം എഫ് എമ്മിന്റെ അറിഞ്ഞതും അറിയാത്തതും എന്ന അഭിമുഖ പരമ്പരയുടെ പുതിയൊരു അധ്യായത്തിലേക്ക് എല്ലാവർക്കും സ്വാഗതം. നമ്മൾ ബിൽ ഗേറ്റ്സ്, രത്തൻ ടാറ്റ, വാരൻ ബുഫേയെ കുറിച്ചൊക്കെ വായിക്കുമ്പോൾ അവരുടെ ഫിലോന്ത്രോപ്പിക്കൽ ആക്ടിവിറ്റിയാണ് നമ്മുടെ മനസ്സിലേക്ക് ഓടിയെത്തുക. ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പി എന്ന വിഷയം തന്നെ വലിയൊരു മഹാസാഗരമാണ്. നമ്മുടെ സമൂഹത്തിൽ ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പിക്കലായുള്ള കാര്യങ്ങൾ ചെയ്യുന്നവർ പല ശ്രേണിയിൽപ്പെട്ടവർ ചെറിയതും വലുതുമായ കാര്യങ്ങൾ ചെയ്യാറുണ്ട്. ഇവിടെ ന്യൂസിലൻഡിൽ ഇങ്ങനെയുള്ള വലിയ ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പിക് കാര്യങ്ങളെ ഏകോപിപ്പിച്ച് നടത്തുന്ന ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പി ന്യൂസിലൻഡിന്റെ തലപ്പത്ത് ഒരു മലയാളിയാണെന്നുള്ള വാർത്ത മലയാളം എഫ് എമ്മിന് വളരെ കൗതുകരമായിരുന്നു. അതുകൊണ്ട് തന്നെ നമുക്ക് സന്തോഷത്തോടെ നമ്മുടെ ഷോയിലേക്ക് സ്വാഗതം ചെയ്യാം ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പി ന്യൂസിലൻഡിന്റെ സിഇഒ രാഹുൽ വാട്സൺ ഗോവിന്ദനെ. സ്വാഗതം രാഹുൽ. മലയാളം സംസാരിക്കാൻ പറ്റുമോ?
കുറച്ചറിയാം.
സാരമില്ല, ഞാൻ മലയാളത്തിൽ ചോദിക്കാം, അപ്പൊ ഒന്ന് റിഫ്രഷ് ചെയ്യാമല്ലോ മലയാളം. ഈ ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പി ന്യൂസിലൻഡ് സിഇഒ എന്ന് ഞങ്ങൾ മനസ്സിലാക്കുമ്പോൾ എന്താണ് ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പി എന്ന് ഞങ്ങളെ ഒന്ന് മനസ്സിലാക്കി തരാമോ?
Yeah, great question. And first of all, thank you for having me on your show. I'm very happy to be here and also very happy to know that your show exists. It was certainly a great joy for me to know that the show was in existence. And I've enjoyed the previous interviews. So let's see if I can also perform. So philanthropy, yes, you're correct. I'm the chief executive of Philanthropy New Zealand. So Philanthropy New Zealand exists to celebrate, inspire and grow effective philanthropy in New Zealand. For the benefit of our communities and for our country's future. So what is philanthropy? So philanthropy, the origination of the name is Greek. Mm. It's a love of humanity. Mm. And it's manifest, your love can be manifest through what we commonly understand, which is giving your money, giving your resources. But it's also about giving your time, your energy, your labor, but also your networks and your knowledge to causes and to the community and things that you really believe in and that the community urgently need help with.
ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പി എന്ന് പറയുന്നത് ഒരു ക്യാഷ് കൊടുക്കുന്ന കാര്യം മാത്രമല്ല, നമ്മുടെ ടൈം ആകാം, നമ്മുടെ ടാലൻസ് ആകാം, എന്താണ് നമുക്ക് കൊടുക്കാനുള്ളത് നമ്മുടെ സമൂഹത്തിലേക്ക് എന്നുള്ളതാണ് ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പി എന്നാണ് രാഹുൽ പറഞ്ഞത്. ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പി ന്യൂസിലൻഡിന്റെ ആക്ടിവിറ്റീസ് എന്തൊക്കെയാണ് ഒരു ഒരു ബ്രോഡർ സ്പേസിൽ പറയാൻ പറ്റുമെങ്കിൽ?
Yeah, our main executive activities are to represent our members, of which there are 200 plus members. And we do that through policy advocacy, research, events, And also a little bit of celebration and mm-hmm. communication of the wonderful work that's happening in New Zealand. And I think that's important for a couple of reasons. My observation when I started the job was that we're constantly surrounded by all the things that are broken and not working. The negative headlines make the negative news makes the headlines very often. And sometimes that has a degenerative impact on society's perception of itself and its well-being and the mental health of people and citizens. But my observation since I've started is actually there are thousands of New Zealanders doing amazing work up and down the country in their local communities. And a lot of that's funded through philanthropic activity, either volunteering or giving money. And we should celebrate that and we should acknowledge that and we should tell stories about that because that helps breed a far more positive society and a society that believes in its own agency to change and for and build a better future.
തീർച്ചയായിട്ടും വളരെ ഇൻസ്പയറിംഗ് ആണ് ഈ ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പിയുടെ കാര്യങ്ങളെ കുറിച്ച് ഇപ്പോൾ രാഹുൽ പറഞ്ഞപ്പോൾ കേൾക്കുമ്പോൾ ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പി ഒരു പേർപ്പസിന് വേണ്ടിയിട്ടാണ് നോട്ട് പ്രോഫിറ്റ് എന്ന് പറയുന്നതിനേക്കാളും കൂടുതൽ ഒരു ഫോർ പേർപ്പസ് എന്ന് പറയുന്നതാണ് കുറെ കൂടെ ചേർത്ത് നിർത്താൻ പറ്റുന്നതെന്ന് എനിക്ക് തോന്നുന്നു. അത് പറയുമ്പോൾ രാഹുൽ എങ്ങനെയാണ് ഇങ്ങനൊരു ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പി സൈഡിലേക്ക് വരുന്നത്? ചെറുപ്പം മുതലേ ഇങ്ങനെയുള്ള കാര്യങ്ങളോട് താല്പര്യമുള്ള ആളായിരുന്നു രാഹുൽ?
Look, I think for me, I'm a very lucky person. You know, I'm very privileged and lucky to live the life that I lead. And that's not because of my creativity or wisdom or hard work. That's because I happened to be born to a certain family who had the means to leave the country and come and settle out here. That's what took me here. And from that early age, I immediately got an advantage that millions of our brothers and sisters in Kerala who haven't left the country has got an opportunity. I think life in Kerala is wonderful. I love going back there. It's fantastic. But life here is also fantastic. And so I felt this sense of responsibility to make the most of my opportunity and of the life that I have here. And part of that is also making sure that you're not just a taker from society, that you think about what you want to give back to that society. And it's in that giving back that you start building a sense of belonging into that new society that you're growing up in. So that's really my underlying motivation. And then over the years, I've developed a few more motivations. And 8 years ago, I got one more when my first child was born. And then 5 years ago, I got one more when my second child was born. So I've got two reasons to think about contributing back to New Zealand society.
വളരെ സന്തോഷം. എങ്ങനെയാണ് രാഹുൽ ഇവിടെ വന്നതും ഇവിടെ സസ്റ്റെയിൻ ചെയ്തതും ഒക്കെ കേട്ടപ്പോൾ ഇപ്പോഴും വളരെ ഹാപ്പി ആയിട്ടിരിക്കുന്നു എന്ന് കേട്ടതിൽ വളരെ സന്തോഷം. ചെറുപ്പത്തിൽ ഇവിടെ വന്ന രാഹുലിന് ഒരു ഐഡന്റിറ്റി ക്രൈസിസ് ഫീൽ ചെയ്തിട്ടുണ്ടോ? അല്ലെങ്കിൽ ഇവിടെ ഇപ്പൊ വരുന്ന നമ്മൾ മലയാളികളായിക്കോട്ടെ ഇന്ത്യക്കാരായിക്കോട്ടെ അവർക്ക് എങ്ങനെയാണ് അവരുടെ ആ ഐഡന്റിറ്റി മെയിൻറ്റെയിൻ ചെയ്തുകൊണ്ട് തന്നെ ഈ കൺട്രിയിൽ ഗ്രോ ചെയ്യാനും സാധിക്കുക?
Yeah, look, it's a very important question. It's a very personal question for most people as well. I'll give you two answers. One is I came here when I was 4 years old, so I wasn't really thinking about these big questions when I arrived. I just wanted to have fun, play cricket, soccer, enjoy the friendships, and really importantly, certainly for my parents, make sure I did well at school. I had a very... I'd say a normal childhood in that sense. As a child, when you look out at the world, you don't really see yourself. You just see the world, and you want to interact with it. And so you don't really question your belonging into that world. You're already there. You just interact with it. And children generally just interact with the world. They don't really see the differences of the other kids. I mean, they observe them. They make comment on them. But beyond that, they don't value those differences as being positive or negative or different. They just see the difference. And they are about enjoying themselves. Adults, on the other hand, as they become more and more mature, as older, tend to start judging yourself. And you tend to start judging other people's. Most of that is not through reflection and wisdom. Most of that is just through your sense of experiences that you've had with the people and the environment around you. Some of those experiences are very positive. Some of those experiences are not so positive. And you start accumulating these experiences that start having a conscious and subconscious bias and how you interact with the world around you, whether you like to acknowledge it or whether you're aware of it. Children don't have that.
So for kids and for your listeners who have young children, don't worry about your children. Just let them be free. Mm-hmm. Let them interact with their Kiwi friends and enjoy life as a young New Zealander, as a young Malayali growing up in New Zealand. Very soon they're going to be calling themselves New Zealanders. I think for the parents and for the adult, for the older migrants, so a lot of our migrants that, in the Malayali community, they come here after graduation, after some work experience. They've come here in their 20s or their 30s or later, but typically 20s and 30s has been a big spike in the last 20, 30 years in New Zealand. Yes. And for them, this is about building a new identity and adding to who they are and grappling with this new country, language, culture, history, while still trying to maintain who they are as a Malayali. It's a wonderful challenge, and I think for me there's four elements in sort of answering. One is, I think you've got to embrace the new culture. Mm. And it's number one, which is you're in New Zealand. So think about what that means. What can you do? The uniqueness of this country, the ability to go hiking in the bush nearby and then the same day go to the beach in the afternoon, the same day go to your school and your work in the inner city. In Kerala, you know, it's not easy to walk to the bush and to work and to play. You're on a bus or a car. Okay. Or, you know, it's hard. So take advantage of that proximity of experience. Nature. In Zealand. And also, consider how you want to get to know the local people, and do it in a way that works for you. So if you've enjoyed playing soccer, or if you've enjoyed playing cricket, join a soccer club, join a cricket club, join a tennis club, a badminton club, and get to know the locals who are doing the same hobby as you, and interact with them through that common thing that you have, which is a hobby. If you're a young parent and you've got toddlers, join a play centre. There are a couple in Auckland. There are a couple of wonderful examples of early childhood centres: the Safari Playgroup or the Little Pearls Early Childhood Centre. They're both great examples of multicultural playgroups. So that's number one. Number two, I think it's important to maintain, or not maintain your culture, but maintain your connection to the culture. Subtle difference. So maintaining connection to your roots is how I sort of prefer to explain it. So the language is really important. I was lucky in that my parents spoke Malayalam at home, which meant that I always had a connection to my extended family in India. So whenever we travelled back there, which is important to do, to go back regularly to replenish the roots, that I didn't feel like the foreigner coming in. I felt like I was going home to some extent. And then when I left there and I came back to New Zealand, again, I didn't feel like the foreigner coming to New Zealand. I felt like I was coming home. So I didn't feel like a foreigner anywhere. I felt like I had two homes, and I still feel that way. I feel this, you know, my sense of home comes from how I feel in the heart. I don't think about it. I arrive and I feel, yeah, this is my place. And then I come back here and I feel, yeah, this is my place. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to maintain your language and your holidays, your traditions like Onam Festival, etc. It's important to do those things. And then you've got to find your community here. So connecting with other Malayalis in New Zealand, really important. It's your safe social net.
Social zone, yeah.
Absolutely. Zone, yeah. It allows you to be in a new place, but surrounded by familiar people, your people.
And familiar culture, tradition.
Correct. Mm. And also some of their ways of navigating the challenges you two are facing might be similar. Yeah. So there's a lot of empathy there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. And then lastly, I think it's about making sure that you're integrating the different aspects of the first thing, which I said, which is your new place and a new culture and new language.
Embracing the culture.
Embracing that, but integrating that with where you have come from, which is the Malayali background, Malayali culture. And then over time, making sure that you're enmeshing and integrating the two, so that you don't feel a sense of isolation in your new place, nor do you feel a sense of increasing isolation from your old place because you haven't been there for a while. Mm-hmm. So the integration is going to be the key. And it's not easy. But I think people can find very practical ways, like I said, sports clubs and play centres and things like that to integrate, to make the integration easier.
Vale important ayittulla moonu karyangalana Rahul paranjathu. ഇവിടെ വരുന്ന കുട്ടികളായിട്ട് വരുന്നവരാകുമ്പോൾ ചെറുപ്പം മുതലേ അവർ സ്കൂളിൽ പോകുന്നു, പ്ലേ ഗ്രൂപ്പിൽ പോകുന്നു, അവർ കുറെ കൂടെ ഇവിടുത്തെ കൾച്ചറുമായിട്ട് അസോസിയേറ്റ് ചെയ്യുന്നു. ടീനേജേഴ്സോ ഏർലി തേർട്ടീസിലുള്ളവർ വന്നു കഴിഞ്ഞാൽ ഇപ്പോൾ ഇവിടെ കാണുന്നുണ്ട് സോക്കർ ക്ലബ്, ക്രിക്കറ്റ് ക്ലബ്, വടംവലി, ഇങ്ങനെയുള്ള ക്ലബ്ബുകൾ മലയാളി അസോസിയേഷൻസിലെല്ലാം ആൾക്കാർ കണക്ട് ആവുന്നുണ്ട്. ഇൻറ്റഗ്രേഷൻ വരുന്നുണ്ട്. ഇപ്പോൾ ഇതുപോലുള്ള ക്ലബ്ബിലെല്ലാം പലതരം ആക്ടിവിറ്റീസ് വരുന്നു, ഫാമിലീസ് വരുന്നു, ചലഞ്ചസ് ഒന്നിച്ച് ഫേസ് ചെയ്യുന്നു. ഒരു അഡ്ഹോക്ക് ഇഷ്യൂസ് വന്നാൽ ഹോസ്പിറ്റലായിട്ട് ഹോസ്പിറ്റലൈസേഷൻ വരുമ്പോൾ നമ്മൾ അങ്ങോട്ടും ഇങ്ങോട്ടും കിത്തൻ കിന്നായിട്ട് നിന്ന് നമ്മൾ സപ്പോർട്ട് ചെയ്യുന്നുണ്ട്. വളരെ നല്ല കാര്യമാണ് രാഹുൽ ഇപ്പം ഷെയർ ചെയ്തത്. അതിനോടൊപ്പം എനിക്ക് ചോദിക്കാനുള്ളത്, നമ്മുടെ ഇന്ത്യൻസ്, പ്രത്യേകിച്ച് മലയാളീസിന്റെ, ഇപ്പൊ രാഹുലിനെ പോലെ ഒരാൾ ഈ ഒരു പൊസിഷനിൽ എത്തിയത് ഞങ്ങളിപ്പം ഓഫ് ലേറ്റ് ആണ് അറിഞ്ഞത് എന്ന പോലെ, മലയാളികളുടെ കോൺട്രിബ്യൂഷൻസ് ഇവിടെ വിസിബിൾ ആകുന്നുണ്ടെന്ന് രാഹുലിന് തോന്നുന്നുണ്ടോ?
I think as a group we are guilty of our own humility and humbleness. One of our great attributes as Malayalis.
Yeah. Not often everybody. Mistaken.
Yeah, not everybody. We can think of people who are not so humble and humility back in Kerala. But generally, Malayalis that you meet internationally, they are quiet, humble people. They just go about doing their work and jobs and contribute to the world around them. And you may not even know that they're Malayalis.
Mm.
and even Malayalis may not necessarily know. You know, sometimes they see the name and they suspect, are you Malayali? You know, I've been asked that a few times. And it's, yes. Ah. I think for me, there are two parts to that. One, it's important for our community to recognize members of the community when they do well, and when they're in positions of influence or decision making, or they're contributing well to the community, to the wider society. Let's celebrate them. Let's recognize them. And I don't mean, you know, a massive show about it, but you can, and small things like interviewing them on a radio show for Malayali FM, or making sure that when they are standing for election in local body politics, that you acknowledge that there is a Malayali standing. You don't have to agree with their policies, but at least acknowledge that one of your people are standing. When there's sporting success, you know, let's acknowledge them and their ethnicity. You know, one of the best batsmen in the world is Rachin Ravindra. You know, he's an Indian, he's not a Malayali. But nevertheless, let's acknowledge the Indianness that we see. And so I think those small things are important, not just for yourself as an adult, but actually for the kids, for the children. They need to see their future reflected in their present. What can they become? What can they do in this new society that they've moved to as kids? And if they don't see their own people in positions of influence in sports or commerce or public service, then it's difficult for them to aspire in their new place. And their stories of aspiration remain from the old place. And they can never quite reach there unless they go back to their old place. And really importantly, what I sort of learned as I was growing up is that even if I should move back to Kerala, I'm not sure I can integrate very well back in Kerala after many years of living, growing up in New Zealand. I'm more of a New Zealander in terms of my outlook and my knowledge and my skills, how I talk and behave, than I am a Malayali. But then I have to ask myself, well, can I thrive here where I feel at home? And that requires, I think, you know, a greater support from our community, rethinking about how you are, thinking about your sense of identity and belonging in the new place.
സോ രാഹുൽ പറയുന്നത്, നമ്മൾ അങ്ങോട്ടും ഇങ്ങോട്ടും കോംപ്ലിമെന്റ് ചെയ്ത് സപ്പോർട്ട് ചെയ്ത് നമ്മൾ നമ്മുടെ സക്സസിനെ സെലിബ്രേറ്റ് ചെയ്യുക. മലയാളീസിന്, പ്രത്യേകിച്ച് ഞാൻ മലയാളം എഫ് എം ആയതുകൊണ്ട് മലയാളീസിനെ കുറിച്ച് എംഫസൈസ് ചെയ്ത് ചോദിക്കുന്നു, നമുക്ക് എങ്ങനെ ഫോർ ഫ്രണ്ടിലോട്ട് വരാം? ഇപ്പം നമ്മൾ ഹ്യൂമിലിറ്റിയെ കുറിച്ച് സംസാരിച്ചു, ഒരുപക്ഷെ നമ്മളിൽ പലർക്കും അതിനുള്ള ടാലൻസ് ഉണ്ട്, കേപ്പബിൾ ആണ്. നമ്മുടെ ഹ്യൂമിലിറ്റി കൊണ്ട് നമ്മൾ ചിലപ്പോൾ ഒരു വൺ സ്റ്റെപ്പ് പുറകോട്ട് എടുക്കുന്നതായിരിക്കാം. എങ്ങനെ നമുക്ക് മുന്നോട്ട് വരാം എന്ന് എന്തെങ്കിലും ഒരു ടിപ്പ് പറയാനുണ്ടോ?
Look, I think in some sectors, for example, in nursing and teaching and IT, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of Malayalis.
And it's really important for us to stay positive in those stories and the contribution we're making and the sense of service we have, particularly in the nursing or teaching communities, and the difference we are making to New Zealand and to New Zealand society. And I think it would be really wonderful for non-Malayalis to recognize Malayalis in a positive way. And I think that could just come through time and some acknowledgement and visibility. The visibility is important because you don't wear a jacket that says Malayali, right? And so when you introduce yourself to your staff meeting or to an event, say that you're a Malayali. Say that you're from Kerala. I do that because it's important. If I say I'm from India, because that's what I look like for most Pākehā New Zealanders, then you're immediately, I think, navigating to their preconceived prejudice of what an Indian actually really is. Mm-hmm. And you deny yourself the ability to convey your unique Indianness, which is the Malayali version of it. And you don't have that conversation. So when most people who are not familiar with what a Malayali is, which is a majority of New Zealand, by the way, when I say, oh, I'm from Kerala, or I'm from Malayali, now, there are most people will say one or two things, which is, where's that from? Mm. Where is that?
Part of the world?
Which part of the world? But I love that question because that gives me the opportunity to talk about Kerala. Mm. And we've got so many wonderful things to say about our state, don't we? So, great, right? The second thing is increasingly many New Zealanders have actually travelled to Kerala. So I find there's sometimes a second answer, which is, oh, Kerala, I love Kerala, beautiful beaches, amazing coconut trees, people are so friendly and happy. And then I point out that did you know that for many, many years, Kerala's tourism tagline, it was the same as New Zealand's, which is God's own country. And then it blows their mind for New Zealand. It's like, oh, what's wonderful, right? So there's a positive impression given of Malayalis to the one person that you've met for the first time. And I think if we all did that, just the interaction, then we start building the profile of Malayalis in New Zealand. There's quite a distinctive profile. As much as I think I also say, look, it's part of India, it's in the southwest of India, the same part of India that Fiordland is to New Zealand, down in the bottom southwest. Tiny state of 30 million people.
Six times of New Zealand population.
That's right. Right. And so just that conversation alone, I think, is a wonderful way for us as Malayalis to become more visible amongst New Zealanders.
Rahul, ഏത് ഇയറാണ് ന്യൂസിലൻഡിൽ വരുന്നത്?
We arrived in 1984.
Okay, almost 40 years ആയിട്ടുണ്ട്. So you will be the best person to ask this question. ഒരു മലയാളി ഇവിടെ വന്നു കഴിഞ്ഞാൽ ഇവിടെ ന്യൂസിലൻഡിലെ കൾച്ചറുമായിട്ട് അഡോപ്റ്റ് ചെയ്യാനായിട്ട് എന്തൊക്കെ കാര്യങ്ങളാണ് ചെയ്യേണ്ടത്?
Look, it's very important when you go to a new place and try and settle in a new place that, number one, obviously you try and learn and understand the language. Mm. Luckily, the language here is English. Mm. So that becomes a little bit easier for most Malayalis who are coming here because their English is pretty good. Mm. The second thing is that you need to understand the culture. And part of understanding the culture is the language. A lot of culture is based on language. That's good. But remember, our version of English, or the Malayali version of English, is informed by a Malayali culture. And the New Zealand version of English is informed by New Zealand culture. So you might understand the words, but there is a New Zealand version of English that you need to understand. Thirdly, is about understanding the history. Mm. And because the country around you is shaped by a history that has led to the current present. And just like, you know, if you were a New Zealander that is moving to Kerala, you know, you might over time learn Malayalam, you might understand the customs and the events that are taking place and so on. But if you don't understand the history of the place, you won't quite understand the present. So for Malayalis coming here to make sense of the present, and really importantly to make sense of how they want to fit into the future, got to understand the history. So one of the most important elements of New Zealand is that this country was founded in 1840 by a founding document called the Treaty of Waitangi. Now, did the country exist before then? Yes, the Māori have been here for centuries. There have been settlers coming in for the last 200 or 300 years, slowly coming in. But in 1840, there was a treaty signed between the Crown, as represented by the Queen Victoria of England at the time, and her representatives in New Zealand, the Governor Hobson, and Maori chiefs who signed the Treaty of Waitangi. Fundamentally, it was about protecting the rights and well-being of, fundamentally, it was about establishing a partnership between Maori and the Crown. The Crown now is referred to as the Government of New Zealand, but the Crown literally then was the, you know, the Crown as represented by the Crown worn by the Queen Victoria. And it was a partnership between two peoples to maintain civil relationships, law and order, protect each other's futures by making sure that there is a common partnership and respect and mutual understanding. Now, in the years since then, literally the few years after the treaty was signed, the decades after they were signed, as per most colonial experiences that Malayalis and Indians and other places around the world have sort of felt through British colonialism, and not just British but other forms of colonialism, it was an exploitative relationship. It was a relationship where the rights of Maori were undermined, land was forcibly stolen and taken, resources were commandeered, and there was no reparation or compensation for these things. And this was in a course of 5, 10, 15, 20 years after the treaty was signed. So by the time the 1900s came about, Maori were already starting to not only be outnumbered in population, but out-resourced and rights trampled upon. And so there is a traumatic history to this country that newcomers to this country need to understand. And over the many years, in particular during my lifetime, the last 40 years in particular, there's been a lot of effort made to redress the situation. Not only because it's socially just to do so, but because of the statistics that Maori find themselves in because of the decades and decades and decades of racist colonial attitudes towards them. And so I think Malayalis will do a great service to themselves and a tremendous service to the future of this country by really understanding the Treaty of Waitangi, how to honour the Treaty of Waitangi, and how to identify with it as newcomers and new settlers to this country, and try and understand Maori through the lens of Maori. And one of the ways I think I've told many immigrants to do this is understand your local hapu or your iwi group. Do you know where the local marae might be? Have you visited the local marae? Don't turn up unannounced, but at least go and find out who the local hapu or iwi might be and say, hey, I'm a newcomer to this country. I'm living in your neighbourhood. Are there any events that you are putting on that I can join? By the way, we're doing an event. It's a Wanam Festival. It's very important to us. Would you like to come and join us? It's a wonderful way to break down barriers and understand and empathise with a uniquely New Zealand population and culture of Te Ao Māori. And you'll find that there is a lot of reception to that. It's important because you'll see amongst in the headlines, if you just arrived in the country, a constant reference to the treaty, to Maori issues and the needs of Maori. And there's a history and a reasoning behind that. You need to understand that and embrace that, because the treaty is part of our past, it's part of our present, and it will be part of our future. So you better find your place within it.
അത് വളരെ ഇമ്പോർട്ടൻ്റ് ആയിട്ടുള്ളൊരു കാര്യമാണെന്ന് എനിക്കിപ്പോൾ മനസ്സിലായി. മലയാളിയാണെങ്കിലും നമ്മളിവിടെ വന്നു കഴിഞ്ഞാൽ ആ ഒരു ബിലോങ്ങിങ്നെസ് ഉണ്ടാകാനായിട്ട് നമ്മൾ ട്രീറ്റിയുടെ അന്തസത്ത മനസ്സിലാക്കിയിരിക്കുന്നത് നല്ലതാണ്. കുറെ കൂടെ ക്ലോസ് ആയിട്ട് നമ്മളത് മനസ്സിലാക്കണം. ഇതുപോലെ തന്നെ ന്യൂസിലൻഡിൽ യുണീക്ക് ആയിട്ടുള്ള വേറെന്ത് കാര്യമാണ് മലയാളിക്ക് യൂട്ടിലൈസ് ചെയ്യാൻ പറ്റുന്നത്?
Well, I think, if you're going to call yourself a New Zealander, you need to understand the context and the history of New Zealand, okay? So you also need to participate in the issues that New Zealanders are talking about and feeling and sensing, from climate change to even, for example, the local and central politics. You'll know that recently many members of our Malayali community have been affected by the pay equity changes, yeah, because their nurses or their teacher aides or their care workers, support workers, and it affects them, directly affects them. So you need to take a view and you need to feel permitted to express yourself, because at the moment the conversation is about the impact it's having on women. Absolutely, it's having a massive impact on women, but is also having a massive impact on Malayalis, on the ethnic communities, who are highly represented in some of these industries and sectors. And so it's important to articulate yourself, to express the impact that it's having for yourself, and do it in a way that is empathetic and not necessarily oppositional, but just express the truth. That is difficult to survive on the salaries that you're on as an immigrant. That is difficult to work the hours that you're working and still find ways to settle into a new country. These are just human stories that people can empathize with and will support you on. So I think for me, my recommendation to Malayalis is make sure that you are engaging with the present issues of New Zealand. It's a wonderful way to start feeling part of the country's present and the future by engaging with it.
പൊതുവെ നമ്മളിവിടെ കാണുന്നൊരു പ്രവണതയാണ് ഇവിടെ വരുന്ന ഇന്ത്യൻസ് മലയാളികളായിക്കോട്ടെ വൺസ് വി സെറ്റിൽ ഇൻ ന്യൂസിലൻഡ് ദി നെക്സ്റ്റ് വിൽ ബി ടു മൂവ് ടു ഓസ്ട്രേലിയ. കഴിഞ്ഞ 40 വർഷമായിട്ട് ഇവിടെ ഉണ്ടായിരുന്ന രാഹുൽ അങ്ങനെ ചെയ്തില്ലെന്ന് മനസ്സിലാക്കുന്നു. ന്യൂസിലൻഡിലുള്ള ഫ്യൂച്ചർ ഓപ്പർച്യൂണിറ്റീസ് കൊണ്ടാണോ ഇവിടെ നിൽക്കുന്നത്? എങ്ങനെയാണ് നമ്മൾ മലയാളികൾക്ക് ആ ഓപ്പർച്യൂണിറ്റി ഗ്രാബ് ചെയ്യാൻ പറ്റുന്നത്?
Spent quite a bit of my 20s living in the Netherlands and Denmark, and so I have lived overseas during the time which I've been a resident and a citizen here. And I think people should live a global life and feel permitted to live anywhere. You know, Malayalis can literally live and play anywhere. They should do so. So make sure that you are feeling a sense of freedom to do that. It is a privilege to be able to feel that freedom. Make the most of it. But if you choose to be here, right, and those words are important, because if you can go, but if you stay, it's because you've chosen to stay. Make sure you make the most of that decision. And the way in which you make the most of that decision is not that you feel this country owes you a better future than another country might offer you. It's because you're contributing to building and contributing to the present, so in a way that you're building a future that you want to be a part of. And that's my sort of call to your listeners, is that the future of New Zealand is somewhat in their hands. It's not just in the hands of New Zealand to give to you to compare to Australia. It's about you making sure that, you know what, if I'm going to stay, I'm going to make this a special place. And I have a role to play in doing that. That my talents and my identity, my skills, my values, my language, my culture has got a positive contribution to make to this country's future. And I can do that through my work. I can do that through my hobbies. I can do that through what I do, like the two of you are doing, through the work in this, you know, wonderful platform. This is a way of building New Zealand's future. Sure, you're interviewing Malayalis and Malayali FM, but you're also interviewing other New Zealanders too. It's not just a contribution to our community. It's a contribution to New Zealand's community.
Exactly.
Okay? And I think that's really important to consider. You have an agency and you have an opportunity to build the future that you want in this country. And it's a wonderful privilege to do that. New Zealand, for me, presents a unique proposition to the world. It is one of the world's youngest countries. It is one of the world's most multicultural and intercultural countries. My boys are an intercultural set of kids. You know, my wife is a Pākehā New Zealander. So will my boys grow up and call themselves Malayalis or Indians or Pākehā or a combination of the two or three? You know, these are unique sort of formation, intercultural sort of kids growing up. You look across Auckland,
there are 250 ethnicities are here.
Yeah, 250 ethnicities. Indians are the third largest ethnicity in New Zealand now. And by 2050, half of New Zealand is going to be Asian. You know, the future of this country is tremendously intercultural and diverse. So the question really as Malayalis is going to be, how do we contribute to that tapestry in a way that is not just good for the country, but wants us, that motivates us to be part of their future, that excites us to be part of their future, that we think, yep, they are going to be very happy to be in that kind of a country. And that journey begins for most of your listeners, begins today, thinking about the contributions that they're making to their community around them, for their children's future and for their own future in this country. Australia will always be tempting. I love bigger places, bigger countries, there's more capital, more people, more things going on. But make the most of what's uniquely New Zealand, and consider how you want to interact and make yourself happy within that uniqueness of New Zealand. You can be happy anywhere, but I absolutely guarantee you that you can be very happy here if you make the most of being here.
Excellent. സാധാരണ ഒരു മലയാളി ചോദ്യം, നാട്ടിൽ പോകാറുണ്ടോ?
Absolutely. Maybe not as often as my family would like me to go. I've just come back from spending 6 weeks in Kerala.
With family.
It was the third trip that my wife has made, and the second trip my first boy Milan has made, and the first trip my second boy, Riley has made. I love going back. I'll go back more often if I could. And it's very important for me to go back, especially for my two boys and for my wife to feel a sense of connection to that heritage.
കേരളത്തിൽ ഏറ്റവും കൂടുതൽ അവർക്ക് ഇഷ്ടപ്പെട്ട കാര്യം എന്താണ്?
That's a good question. I think probably the climate.
Better.
The weather, for sure. The ability just to wear shorts and a t-shirt 24/7 is unbelievable. But also the food, not necessarily the constant supply of rice and curry. I think they defeated my boys after 1 week. They were over that. But
enough of curry.
Absolutely. Every day is rice and curry. You know, the fresh fruit, the coconuts, the mangoes in season, and pomegranates. And I mean, we're very lucky in Kerala. You know, it is called God's Own Country for a reason. Very lucky New Zealand is called God's Own Country for a different reason as well, yeah. Right? But I think for me, the boys loved the greenery. It's a beautiful country. And the food, I think, were probably the two highlights. And if I'm probably honest, it's the ability to it's a bunch of family that love to dote on them and shower them with gifts and sweets and chocolates and ice, all the things that they don't get from mum and dad at home. They probably enjoyed that too.
So they may be waiting for the next trip.
Oh, I'm sure they are. They love going back. And they enjoyed it, and I love going back too. I'm very lucky in many ways, and they are too, to have that connection to a different place than New Zealand. You know, as immigrants, sometimes you feel lonely and isolated in New Zealand. But actually, you have something that New Zealanders who are very well connected in New Zealand don't have, which is a connection to a different place. And a different culture, a different history, a different reality. You're lucky to have it. You should make the most of that.
Okay. What's your future plan for Philanthropy New Zealand?
Oh, great question. I thought you were asking a future plan for me, and I was going to say, well, I've got no idea. But future plan for Philanthropy New Zealand. Look, New Zealand is a very generous country. We manifest our generosity largely through how much we volunteer. Look at the two of you. but there's also, you know, thousands and thousands of people every day, every weekend who are volunteering up and down the country. So our generosity is through our labor generally. But I think there's a latent generosity in terms of how much money we give. We give about $4 billion a year to the community. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an opportunity to do and to give more that is sitting there. So for me, it's Philanthropy New Zealand about activating that latent generosity that sits amongst New Zealanders to inspire that. Mm-hmm. And in this way too, I think for Malayalis, you know, I would love to support their aspiration for New Zealand's future, to see how can I support their generosity and how do they wish to support New Zealand's future, so either through philanthropic giving or through volunteering. You know, how can we support that through our community efforts and who we know in the community? So Philanthropy New Zealand is really about supporting our members and our members of the community, from the businesses to organisations to improve, to inspire and celebrate the effectiveness of their philanthropic actions and grow that pie for all of us in the community and for our country in the future.
എക്സലന്റ്. ഒത്തിരി സന്തോഷം രാഹുൽ ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പി ന്യൂസിലൻഡിന്റെ സിഇഒയുടെ സ്ഥാനത്തിരുന്നുകൊണ്ട് തന്നെ മലയാളികൾക്ക് എങ്ങനെയൊക്കെ കോൺഫിഡൻ്റ് ആയിട്ട് കോൺട്രിബ്യൂട്ട് ചെയ്യാം ന്യൂസിലൻഡ് കൾച്ചറിനോടും, എങ്ങനെ ഇഴുകിച്ചേരാം ന്യൂസിലൻഡ് ഫാബ്രിക്കുമായിട്ടും എന്നൊക്കെ ഞങ്ങളോട് വിശദീകരിച്ചതിനും മലയാളം എഫ് എമ്മിന്റെ ശ്രോതാക്കളോട് ഇത്രയധികം സമയം ചെലവഴിച്ചതിനും ഒത്തിരി സന്തോഷം. നന്ദി. നമസ്കാരം.
നമസ്കാരം. താങ്ക് യു.
പ്രിയപ്പെട്ട ശ്രോതാക്കൾ, മലയാളം എഫ് എം 104.6 ഇതുവരെ കേട്ടത് മലയാളം എഫ് എമ്മിന്റെ അഭിമുഖ പരമ്പര അറിഞ്ഞതും അറിയാത്തതും. ഫിലാന്ത്രോപ്പി ന്യൂസിലൻഡിന്റെ സിഇഒയായ രാഹുൽ വാട്സൺ ഗോവിന്ദനുമായുള്ള അഭിമുഖം. ഇനി നോ ഇംഗ്ലീഷ്, നോ ഇംഗ്ലീഷ് വിത്ത് ഹോസ്റ്റ് റോജി വർഗീസ്.
നമസ്കാരം ആൻഡ് വെൽക്കം ടു മലയാളം എഫ് എം 104.6's നോ ഇംഗ്ലീഷ്, നോ ഇംഗ്ലീഷ് വിത്ത് യുവർ ഹോസ്റ്റ് റോജി വർഗീസ്. Today, we discuss public speaking. Did you know that the fear or the phobia associated with public speaking is called glossophobia? Most people fear public speaking more than heights and spiders. Today, ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you would use this fear and turn it into intent. It doesn't matter whether you're teaching in a classroom, standing in a hall and giving a speech, pitching in a meeting. I hope by the end of this episode, you will leave with a playbook and therefore become confident and strong speakers. Let's press on. Here's the plan. We first work on your mind. What's the mentality we need to have before we start delivering a speech? Then we work on your voice. After that, we look at the way in which you structure your content. And finally, body language. Let's talk about mentality. Every public speaker in the world feels slightly nervous before they start. It's quite common. Anxiety and excitement are cousins, like love and madness, bravery and stupidity. Let the audience decide. There are plenty of reasons why people feel a bit nervous or anxious. Number one, and the most common that I have seen, is that people tend to overdraft their speeches. Too many points. They want to remember every tidbit of what they've written, and therefore when they forget one, they freeze. It's that anxiety. It's that, will I remember every one of them? You've got to realize and understand this. Your audience does not know the number of points that you have written, does not know the order in which it is written. Therefore, you are the master of your own content. When you stand there, all they do is listen to you. In case you forget a part or you freeze, go back to the previous point and say, well, let's clarify what I've said before. Remember, try not to overdraft, because if you overdraft, there's a chance or a probability that you might freeze. That's number one. Number two is the idea of perfection, the paralysis caused by the idea of perfection when you speak. A good speech or an effective speech, well, to be honest, can't be determined by you. It's the audience. And every audience behaves, every audience that you talk to, speak to, behave in a different way. Therefore, we can't run behind perfection. But what you can do is assign micro goals to your speech. For example, you could say, today I'm going to have 3 deliberate pauses when I speak. Or I'm going to add humor to my speech. Or I'm going to have 3 well-positioned transitions or sentence connectors. Set specific micro goals which will take away the idea of perfection. And that's the second part. Finally, and the most important that I believe, is when we tend to speak for a longer time. Remember, this is not natural. Therefore, just like any activity in the world, this too requires warm-ups. You need vocal drills that helps you to warm up your vocal instruments before you speak. Now, how does that help in mentality? Because you tend to feel tired when speaking for a while. Vocal drills usually would be a lip drill, a tongue drill, for example, the lip trill. Trrr is a lip trill. Reading tongue twisters. Excellent. As part of your vocal warm-ups. So, in order to feel relaxed, the 3 things. 1, Take away the idea of perfections, set a micro goal. Two, do not overdraft. That tends to, our speakers freezing, do not tend to overdraft. Have, let's say, aim towards naturality. To be natural, and therefore you become unique in the way you speak. And then do set up some vocal warm-ups before you get on stage or before you do any sort of public speaking. Now let's talk about your voice. Your voice carries the meaning of your words. Your voice is something that you can work on. And when you're working on your voice, which means you're reading your content, these are the things I want you to be thinking about. One, modulation. What are the words or phrases that you would like to enunciate or stress? Because you deem those ideas to be important. Cadence, the pace at which you speak. Sometimes you've got to slow down when you speak, and sometimes you may have to speak faster. The tone, is your speech humorous? Is your speech persuasive or argumentative? Is your speech informative? Are you teaching? And that's the tone that you need to have. Let me give you an example. I'm going to read this particular line in a monotone or robotic. I am thrilled to share one idea that can change your next presentation. I'm going to do that once more. I am thrilled to share one idea that can change your next presentation. And now I'm going to work my voice, use modulation, cadence, and also pause between any part of the sentence or a part of the sentence that I feel is important. Notice. I am thrilled to share one idea that can change your next presentation. I'm going to repeat that again. I'm thrilled to share one idea that can change your next presentation. So if you heard that or noticed, I stressed on the word thrilled. I slowed down on one idea. I grouped that can change. I put them together and I paused before your next presentation. In fact, I pause after the word change. Notice again, I'm thrilled to share one idea that can change your next presentation. For me, I stressed on the word or enunciated the word thrilled because I believe it's my emotion that I need to show my audience. I slowed down on one idea because I'm trying to tell the audience that there's only one idea that I would love to share. And then finally, the most important direction that I can give is change your next presentation, which is why I paused after the word change. This is what you need to do when you get your content. Underline key phrases or words that you need to enunciate. Mark the areas where you need to deliver the dramatic or the deliberate pause. Practice the cadence and the pace at which you need to speak. Thereby, you will learn to work your voice. Some of the problems that happen here is you tend to repeat a particular point because you sense the audience and you realize, okay, the audience may not understand or the audience may find a particular point difficult. For that, all you have to do is don't repeat it too many times. And if you do, use simple synonyms. Number one, very simple synonyms. Two, try to avoid using jargon. Now, what has that got to do with voice? Isn't that more to do with language? And I'll tell you why. When you use jargon, it sometimes interrupts the natural way in you, the way you speak. Now, some of you, if you are well-versed with using jargon, make sure that it's embedded well with your natural pace of speech. From what I have seen sometimes, jargon tends to interrupt your pace. So if you're using jargon, make sure that's embedded well. Two, use power verbs, which means use simple and short concrete words instead of large multisyllabic ones, unless you want to emphasize on them. And obviously, the one that I said before, which is use single synonyms, simple and single synonyms. That way, it does not interrupt the way you speak. Remember, the way you speak is your natural voice. Let's work with that. The next part of your public speech is how do you structure your content in a way that enables you to deliver your speech better? Step one, create a logic of your own when you write down all your ideas. You can create a storyboard The logic has to be unique and to you. And how do you know that your logic makes sense or is successful? You are able to remember the next idea. If you intend to cram all your ideas, and there's nothing that connects between, and nothing connects your ideas, you will forget and you will freeze. So please remember, create that cohesiveness between your ideas by understanding or creating a logic that is unique to you. Once you're done with that, my second suggestion is to use signpost language or transitional words. If you go online and you put list of sentence connectors, or signpost language, or transitional words, you would get a huge list. Now, what that does, for example, if you had to show a balance between ideas, you will use words like on the other hand, like showing the other side. If you had to show contrast, you use words like however, even though, although. You want to add an idea, you use words like moreover. Depending on the type of content and where you wish to navigate or take your audience through your ideas, where you wish to do that, that's what transitional words or signpost language will help. You have a logic and you are taking your audience through that logic. Therefore, please use signpost language. As you write your content down, it is my very strong suggestion that you need to script word for word your introduction and your conclusion. The two most powerful parts of your presentation, of your speech or presentation. One catches the audience, the others think about it as you let them go. They make you think, the beginning and the end. When you start with your presentation, when you start with speaking, I always say start with something that's practical. Start with something that makes it personal. Start with something that you can connect with the audience. And I believe that if any topic in the world, there's always something that you can connect to your audience. Make it simple. And in the end, let them go with a call to action. Let them go with a thought that will help them to think about what you've been trying to explain or tell or address. So remember, a well-written, scripted introduction or a start and a conclusion, a start and the end. So, three important parts. Number one, create, arrange your ideas in such a manner that the logic is your own. Create a roadmap. There should be a logic or you will freeze. Two, use of transitional words or signpost language that will help the audience navigate your logic and your content, making them easy or making it easy for them to remember your ideas. And finally, script your introduction, script your conclusion. Creates a powerful effect when you speak. And finally, body language. Three areas of your body that you need to be wary about. Your feet, your hands, and your eyes. Your feet, your hand, and your eyes. Now, if you are standing and delivering your speech, make sure that your feet is not close together, not far apart, in a comfortable position. Make sure that you're standing well. Now, most of the time, I've seen speakers who pace up and down a lot. Now, if you pace up and down, if you walk up and down the stage and you're talking, remember, then you're asking our audience to look at you and they may turn out to be pigeons watching a tennis match. Don't do that. It's okay to walk up and down the stage. It's okay to take short steps. Go slow. So you can walk, pause, walk again, pause. Now, in doing that, again, focus on the fact that you only walk in between your points. You don't walk between sentences. If there is a point, if there's something that you like to hammer in home, then what you do is you stand and you talk. It's always good to walk a little bit, but not long. You don't traverse up and down the stage. You walk a little bit. Pause, step, smile, and talk. Remember, walking is all right. Standing is better. But remember, if you're standing, it's okay to stand behind a pulpit, you're placing your hands there, and you're talking. If you do want to talk, you hold the mic in your hand, you do want to walk, that's okay, but short steps. And remember, you never give important points mid-sentences. You never walk mid-sentence, sorry. All right, from there, you move on to your hands. Hands, the most important and seen part of your body, apart from your face. See, the problem with hands is people tend to over-gesture. I mean, that's the first thing they do. They tend to open it wide. And therefore, hands tend to cover up space more than deliver meaning. In my suggestion, I say, depending on the intensity and the value of your topic, short ideas, small ideas, directions, one hand is enough. Bigger the idea, talk about it. Use deliberate hand gestures. Now, of course, I don't want you to script your hand gestures, but make sure it comes naturally. There should be a reason why you're using your hand. This needs to be practiced. How do you use your hand when you speak? I prefer using a pulpit, if I can keep my hand there and I can use it in that manner, thereby enabling me to enunciate or talk using a tone. So I like to use my hand that way. When I'm standing, I always hold a microphone in one hand, therefore it's always my left hand, or I'll use my left hand, and I'll use my right hand if I'm a right-hander, because if right-handers can use their right, left-handers can use their left, and then you use your hand. So when you use your hand, you're enunciating. Remember, your hand does not cover up space, it underlines an idea. You're telling the audience, you're talking something important. And then we come to your eyes, your face. Remember, ideally, you need to look at everyone in the audience. You never look at one person, glare at them. I feel a bit weird. Ideally, look at them for 2 or 3 seconds, smile, talk. Move to the center, smile, talk. Move to the people at the back, smile and talk. Raise your head a little bit. Move to the left, move to the right. You are a nervous speaker. Don't even look at people. Look at the walls on the left, wall above, wall to the right. But remember, you do need to look and cover the entire audience. Your eyes speak for itself. And when you do, people realize that you're actually having a conversation or you're actually talking to them rather than transfixing your gaze onto one person. If you have notes, make it a point to have a quick glance at your notes and remember, look up. Don't spend more than 3 to 4 seconds or even more than 5 seconds. I think 5 seconds is enough, but have a look at it, have a quick glance. Shorter the better, and then look back at the audience. Your feet, your hands, and your eyes. Remember, you're the one delivering the speech. You're the one standing there. You're the one holding the microphone. People are listening to you. Make sure you give them a good look, because then they'll have a good look at you. Ladies and gentlemen, let's recap what we have done. We have spoken about mentality, spoken about how to use our voice, structure our content, and finally, body language. Let me suggest an activity that you can do at home. One, choose a topic that you're very confident about. Write it down in bullet points. Use the logic that I've discussed, you know, at the beginning, that we have discussed about. Use transitional or signpost language where necessary. Deliver your speech. Make sure that you record yourself for just 1 minute. Once you're done with all that, remember, not more than a minute. Once you're done with that, make sure that you only listen to yourself first. Thereby, you can understand what to do or how to improve your voice. You'll understand your modulation, your cadence, and your tone. Once you're done with that, shut off the volume and watch yourself, and therefore you to be able to focus on your body language. For those of you who wish to improve in meetings, because it's some sort of a public speaking when you do that, remember, you are the master of your content. You know what the agenda is going to be. I'm sorry, there's no other way other than practice. Because when you practice, you're choosing the words in which you would like to deliver your content. And as you do that on a regular basis, you will eventually get confident about it. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, there are people around you who understand that you have a plethora of ideas. Ideas that are so good, they just want to listen to you. And the only way you can make it interesting is by using your voice. Like in the great movie, or in a good movie called The King's Speech, you, ladies and gentlemen, have a voice, and therefore use it wisely. I'll see you next episode. Namaskaram.
നിങ്ങൾ ഇതുവരെ കേട്ടത് നോ ഇംഗ്ലീഷ് നോ ഇംഗ്ലീഷ് വിത്ത് ഹോസ്റ്റ് റോജി വർഗീസ്. ഈ പരിപാടി നിങ്ങൾക്കായി അവതരിപ്പിച്ചത് കൃപ ഫൈനാൻഷ്യൽ സൊല്യൂഷൻസ്, മൈൻഡ് ട്രീ നഴ്സിംഗ് സൊല്യൂഷൻസ്, ക്ലസ്റ്റർ ഔട്ട്ഫിറ്റ്സ്, ബ്ലോക്ക് ഹൗസ് ബേ, സെഹിയോൺ ടൂർസ് ആൻഡ് ട്രാവൽസ്. ഇതോടെ മലയാളം എഫ് എം 104.6 എന്ന ഇന്നത്തെ പരിപാടികൾ അവസാനിക്കുന്നു. അടുത്ത പ്രക്ഷേപണം അടുത്ത വെള്ളിയാഴ്ച വൈകുന്നേരം 7:25. അതുവരേക്കും എല്ലാ പ്രേക്ഷകർക്കും നമസ്കാരം പറയുന്നത് സിന്ധു പുന്നോസ്. മലയാളം എഫ് എം 104.6 പാട്ടുപാടാം, കൂട്ടുകൂടാം, കാറിലും കേൾക്കാം.
ശ്രീലകം കേരം തിങ്ങും ആവന ശ്രീലകം കേരളം
We all love a bit extra in our pocket. And right now, 368,000 Auckland households